lights out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two Soft Compounds.
And hello, welcome to another Two Soft Compounds podcast. My name's Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And that's a bit more like it.
Yes, thank you very much. A bit more like it.
That was finally, we had a decent Grand Prix. That was great though, wasn't it? Talk about night and day. Had all these rubbish, boring, same old, samey Grand Prix. And then I was not really expecting much from this weekend, if I'm honest.
Well, I watched FP1 and 2 on the Friday, and you could tell from the first practice it was going to be an interesting weekend, and then FP2 was actually really exciting, certainly the most exciting practice session of the year so far. As we predicted on last week's podcast, everyone was ripping their front wings off on the sausage curbs, which I know are one of your personal favourites.
I do love a sausage curb, yeah.
And then there were the crashes. You know, Vettel span out, almost hit the wall. Verstappen span out and wrecked the back of his car, which I thought would lead to a gearbox change. So I thought, oh no, he's going to start at the back of the grid. But obviously that didn't happen. And it was just really interesting in the practice sessions. And then the gossip after that was that Mercedes were on the back foot slightly because Ferrari had put the fastest times in, which they did again in FP3 on the Saturday morning. So when it came to qualifying, it was kind of anyone's game, really. I half expected Mercedes to be sandbagging and that they would turn it into party mode for quali, but they just didn't. And it made for an amazing weekend and a great spectacle.
It was just strange, wasn't it? Because you're kind of watching the Mercedes going, well, I don't understand what's, you know, because it was both of them as well. They were both very average. And it was like someone had taken something off the car and just made it particularly slow. Or obviously it was the other way around, that someone's put something on the Ferrari and the Red Bull. But it was really nice to see, really good to see. And it goes to show that you just, one little tweak, one little, you know, because we've been moaning about the F1 the whole season, really, that it's been very boring, very samey. But, you know, that one little tweak, you know, not having a Hamilton on pole, and it can make a massive difference. And that was a phenomenal race. It was one of the, you know, I've said to you before, sometimes I'm on my phone and I'll kind of glance up and go, well, it's nearly finished. And I've just not been watching it because the commentators don't go mad because nothing's happening and all that. It was one of those races where I literally didn't even pick my phone up. I'm watching it from start to finish. And there was just, you know, excitement happening all over. The McLarens were phenomenal as well. And it's really nice to see, because obviously McLaren did all right in the last race, but to see them both up there in qualifying and to see them both doing well in the race. And you think to yourself, okay, this is good now, because as we said before, teams like Williams, McLaren, they need to be up there fighting with the top teams, and to get as many teams as we can nearer the front end is what it needs. And I think it's great. And, you know, Lando is great and Carlos has been great as well. They've got some good drivers and that team is heading in the right direction. And, you know, they could have a good year or two ahead of them, McLaren, which would be great.
Yeah, fourth place in the Constructors' Championship. They're definitely the best of the rest at the moment. And we'll talk about the race in more detail in just a sec. I did an interesting experiment during quali. My missus detests Formula One. She just doesn't like it.
I thought you were going to say she detests you.
Well, maybe that as well. But she watched qualifying with me, especially Q3 on Saturday, because I'd said to her, listen, this is quite interesting because it's not the same old order. So I recorded something whilst we were watching Q3. You know when they put the initials on the side of the screen, the three letters, you know, so VET for Vettel, for instance. And I ran down the top 10 order just to see which drivers she would get from those three initials. This is someone who maybe watches one race a year and really doesn't pay much attention. But this just shows you, I think, the global appeal of Formula One in an era where many people have been moaning about how bad it is. But this shows you the appeal, because she gets quite a few right. Have a listen to this.
In first place at the moment,
Leclerc. Leclerc, okay. I think
so,
it's a silent C.
Bot is...
is Bottas.
Very good. Ver is...
Verstappen.
Ham is...
Hamilton.
Gas...
Gaslight.
Gasly. Rye.
Raikkonen.
Gio.
Don't know him.
Giovinazzi.
Okay. Don't know him.
N-O-R.
Norberg. Made that up.
Norris.
Okay, Norris.
Mag.
Magnussen.
Vett.
Vettel.
Very good. Vettel. Oh, I'm very proud of you.
I think Norberg was my favourite there. That was a cross between Norris and Rosberg, wasn't it? Norberg, it'll do. Yeah. It actually does sound like a driver there, doesn't it?
She was taking the Berg from Rosberg, yeah, definitely. But I see that proves a point that the global appeal of Formula One, someone who really doesn't care and hardly ever watches it, but the names are still in the ether, in the psyche of people, which I thought was quite interesting. So in quali, the other thing that happened, which was great, of course, is Leclerc out-qualified Hamilton, and then Hamilton gets the grid penalty, which I was at that stage going, yes, this is brilliant. So now Hamilton's going to start in fifth, and as it turns out, because Magnussen had a penalty, he started in fourth. And that was, for Sunday, that was, right, race on, here we go.
Mm. And again, you know, even people like Magnussen and, you know, if you have people like that up in the top five or six, you know, and we've said Lando Norris and people like that, it's great. It just spices it up because they're not necessarily the fast cars. So you get people held up behind them. Then you get all the kind of tyre changes and stuff that comes into play. And it just spices everything up, completely keeps the race open. But, it was exactly what F1 needed, I think, this race.
Check out twosoftcompounds.com for the latest news, competitions and updates.
So we mentioned a lot about McLaren obviously doing very well. Raikkonen had a really good weekend as well, and Giovinazzi got himself his first point. Did you see the clip as well where I think did he do a bet with his boss that if he gets a point he has to have his hair cut?
No, his boss has said if you get your first world championship point this weekend you've got to cut your hair, and he refused, so his boss chased him through the garage and cut a big chunk off the back of his hair.
Hello, is that HR?
But you know, that again made the weekend, those sort of personality elements, instead of seeing teams pack up with stony faces, they were all round the paddock enjoying the atmosphere, which, let's face it, was made by the Dutch fans who just plastered the place in orange. It was fantastic. But every driver and team, I thought, after the race, had a really bright, smiley outlook on things, as if a big pressure had been lifted. Whether they'd done really well or whether they hadn't done so well, I think everyone was really pleased with the weekend, which is great.
And I think hats off to the people that built the stand as well, because when they were all, the Dutch fans were standing up and jumping up in the air. Did you see that scene where I was thinking, oh God, that's going to be unstable. That's just a bit of scaffolding. And my personal favourite bit of the whole weekend was when Raikkonen had Hamilton cut him up, and he obviously gave him a gesture, and he was on TV talking about that moment, and he said, well, I noticed the aeroplanes in the sky, so I was pointing up at the aeroplanes, which I just thought was brilliant. That was his excuse. I was just pointing up at the aeroplanes.
Nice, look at the planes.
I thought that bit was brilliant. But, you know, again, we've said this before, he's a great personality, Raikkonen, and you need a bit more of that. You know, Formula One can take itself very seriously a lot of the time. Hamilton, he's a funny one. If he's on form, he can be good fun. Vettel's very witty, got a great little personality. But you need a lot of that. You need, you know, you get some very serious, boring drivers, and it needs that, you know, that personality element, that kind of party atmosphere. And like you say, you know, the more Toto Wolffs, the more Raikkonens, the more, you know, that type of personality, the better, I think.
Interestingly, on the Sky coverage over the weekend, not a mention of Toto Wolff. He was not interviewed before or after the race. It was like he didn't exist this weekend,
really?
Which was strange. There was lots of coverage of the McLaren team and Red Bull, obviously. Christian Horner was on a few times after the race talking about how proud he was of Max and Honda and everything else, as you'd expect. And the McLaren drivers, Sainz and Norris, talking about personalities. Norris has got a great little dry sense of humour. Really good. They were interviewing them after the race, and there was three people stood behind them waving a Union Jack, and he went, oh, there's my three fans. Brilliant. Let's hope they go to Silverstone. He was great. And if you think about the race itself, obviously, the grid is a grid that we haven't seen for a long, long time. So the top three was really interesting with Verstappen. So three different teams represented on the first three slots on the grid.
It was the youngest front row ever as well, wasn't it? Because they're both 21, Verstappen. Yeah. And so the youngest front row ever in Formula One, which is crazy.
Which is great. Yeah. So obviously the start, and Verstappen's anti-stall kicks in. And he goes from second to seventh before he's even got to the first turn. And at that point, I thought, oh, here we go. What a promising race this was. Now we're going to see Hamilton steam through. He's going to overtake Leclerc by the end of lap one, and it's just going to be him and Bottas, a Mercedes 1-2. Good night, Vienna. And obviously it didn't pan out like that, which is absolutely fantastic. Mercedes say after the race that they had real cooling issues with their car, so they weren't able to push. So they still had the speed, but they just weren't able to unleash it. Leclerc, as we saw, drove a fantastic race, and we'll get on to the overtaking and the controversy in just a bit. But once again, Ferrari in a strong position over the Austrian weekend. Once again, their head of cocking things up raised his ugly head and cocked things up. So Vettel was pitted. They weren't ready for him.
Yeah, how do you pit a team like Ferrari and not have tyres ready to go?
Exactly. I don't get it. That is someone at Ferrari cocking things up.
It'd have been better off going a quick fit.
Yeah, it just happens. Seems to happen every weekend with Ferrari, whether they're on the pace or not. Someone makes a strategic error. So they pit Vettel. They weren't ready. And Vettel overall did really well because he was the only driver who did two stops of the main contenders. So with that in mind, he did pretty well. And I guess the second stop for Vettel was a slight strategy call to put him on softer tyres so he could have a go at Lewis and Bottas, which is eventually what he did.
Reminded me a bit of the old Vettel, actually. It was like, OK, here we go. He's back. You know, he's doing some overtaking. He's driving like he used to drive. And I felt like he was confident in the car and was driving like the old Vettel this weekend, which is great.
And then with Leclerc, they brought him in too early, effectively, which meant that his tyres were 10 laps older than Verstappen's, which is what gave Verstappen the advantage to eventually get past and win the race. So Ferrari, strategically, not great again this weekend. They need to have a good look at themselves there. One team that really impressed me, and you mentioned it before, was McLaren. Norris had a great race, overtook Lewis on the opening lap and almost held him off down into turn four. But great overtaking moves from Norris and a really mature drive, gave space where it was needed, and but wasn't backing off and was not making it easy for anyone overtaking him. And one thing that I was disappointed on was the lack of TV coverage for Carlos Sainz, who started in 19th after taking the grid penalty and finished in 8th and made some fantastic overtaking moves, many of which were missed on telly.
And if you look back, you know, the McLaren team a year or two ago were pretty much in the same boat that Williams are in now. You know, so if you said in 2 years' time they're going to go from 19th to 8th or they're going to be 6th on the grid and finish 5th, 6th, you know, you'd go, don't be so stupid, you know, because that's where Williams are at the moment. But that's a good sign, I think, that McLaren have got back there. You know, and they've obviously got some more parts to come, and it's just looking very good. I thought it was nice that, obviously, because McLaren have given up the Honda engine, but it was nice to see that Honda won with the Red Bull, and then obviously McLaren are doing okay with the Renault as well. So they're both, I think they've both kind of got their stuff together, both Renault and Honda, in those guises as such, because the actual Renault team's not doing great, is it? But yeah, just good to see that, you know, and we need Williams to up their game now and get back up there. The Toro Rosso wasn't great this weekend either.
Toro Rosso, very disappointing. The Haas team, what has happened to them? They are only 16 points ahead of Williams. They're second to last in the Constructors' Championship after so much promise last year, and we really thought they were going to perform well. We've seen them do quite well over one lap pace in qualifying, but their race pace has been woeful. And again, Renault. Danny Ric, after the race, said that he was disappointed. They brought lots of upgrades to this weekend and none of them had worked. So they've got an uphill battle as we head towards Silverstone.
The Mean Mover.
So lots of good overtaking happened over the weekend, obviously, and a couple of controversial moves. For me, the final move was fine, and I actually sat there and thought, if they give a penalty for that, and I think the only thing that let it down this weekend was the fact it took them 3.5 hours to decide whether or not they're giving a penalty, because again, come on, that doesn't take 3.5 hours. It's longer than the race. The race happens and then they take longer again to decide whether it was right or wrong. For me, it was good racing, and I think a few drivers have said this as well on Twitter that I've seen, that if there was gravel on the outside there, the driver on the outside, in this case Leclerc, would have had to hang back a bit because he would have gone onto the gravel and he wouldn't have wanted to do that. And this is the problem with the modern tracks that we've discussed before. It's all tarmac, it's all tarmac runoff areas. So these drivers are going off on the runoff areas, then immediately complaining on the radio and hope that the stewards will then go, oh no, yeah, no, he impeded him, we'll give him that race win back. And it shouldn't be like that. You know, we've said about karting before, you know, it is what it is, isn't it? And I always, If I get beaten by someone that plays dirty, I'm like, okay, well, I'll play dirty back. If you're going to knock me off and come past me because you're going to barge me out of the way, you bet if I get a chance to barge you out of the way, I'm going to do the same thing on the next lap. And I think that's what it needs, a bit of that. You know, obviously not dangerous stuff, but it needs some good, heavy, hard racing. And then you get races and victories like that.
When I saw it at first, I thought Max hadn't left him enough space. But then when I saw it in the slow-mo and the repeats, what's clear is that Max has already won the corner at that point, and Leclerc's still trying to defend, which he shouldn't have done. If he'd have backed off, he could have swept down the inside after him and had a good run into turn four, which didn't happen. Max was late on the apex, but that's because he was braking late to try and get the manoeuvre done, which is why he's more in the middle of the track, giving less space to Leclerc. But Leclerc should have given up the battle at that point instead of hanging out to dry on the outside, which caused him to go off. I don't think I ever thought it should have been a penalty. I would not want it to have been the stewards in that room making that decision. Because if they'd have issued a penalty and changed the order of the race...
Again.
That would have been the death knell for Formula One. I mean, it just would have done. It was a great weekend. It was a really exciting race. All those tight overtaking manoeuvres. And then for them to have stripped a victory away from Verstappen, that could have caused untold damage to the sport. And it would just be a disaster. So I'm glad they made the right decision. And I think it was the right decision. I think that was close wheel-to-wheel racing, which is what we all want to see.
Leaving screeching skid marks all over the place. Two soft compounds.
Right, let's get all the stats then from the Austria Grand Prix. You can follow him on Twitter, @LightsOut. His name is Nicky, and here he is with all this week's stats.
Mercedes' 10-race winning streak finally came to an end as Max Verstappen won the Austrian Grand Prix. It's the first time a non-Mercedes driver has won a race since the 2018 Mexican Grand Prix, which was also won by Verstappen. Austria joins Mexico as the second country in which Verstappen has triumphed twice. It was Verstappen's 6th F1 victory and his 2nd consecutive win at the Red Bull Ring. He's the 4th driver to have taken back-to-back wins at the track, after Alain Prost, Michael Schumacher and Nico Rosberg. The 2019 Austrian Grand Prix saw a Honda-powered victory for the first time since Jenson Button won the 2006 Hungarian Grand Prix. It was the 2nd win for Honda Power at the track, the 1st since Nigel Mansell won for Williams in 1987. Red Bull became the 6th team in F1 history to reach a tally of 60 wins. The team now have exactly the same number of wins as they have pole positions. The other podium finishers were Charles Leclerc and Valtteri Bottas, meaning that for the first time in 2019, 3 different teams finished in the 3 podium positions. Verstappen and Bottas became the 12th and 13th drivers to record 3 podium finishes at the Red Bull Ring, while Charles Leclerc became the 51st different driver to finish in the top 3 at the circuit. This is the first time since the 2018 Canadian Grand Prix that Bottas has finished on the podium without his teammate also finishing in the top 3. On Saturday, Charles Leclerc took his 2nd pole position, becoming the 69th driver to have taken multiple pole positions in his career. Other drivers with 2 career poles include Gilles Villeneuve, Jean Alesi, Heinz Hallfrenton and Daniel Ricciardo. He also became the 20th different driver to have taken pole at the Red Bull Ring and the first Ferrari driver to have taken pole in Austria since Michael Schumacher in 2003. With Verstappen starting alongside Leclerc on the front row, the 2019 Austrian Grand Prix set a new record for the youngest ever front row in F1 history. 6 drivers had grid penalties for the race, meaning that Charles Leclerc and Romain Grosjean were the only drivers who started the Austrian Grand Prix where they actually qualified. This year's race at the Red Bull Ring marked the first time all of the top 9 on the grid at the Austrian Grand Prix finished the event. All of the top 9 on the grid also scored points. The only point scorer outside of the top 9 was Carlos Sainz, who started on the back row of the grid. Every car finished the race. Robert Kubica finished last of the 20 cars, making this race the first ever in which a Williams car has finished in 20th place. Felipe Massa was classified in 20th at the 2016 Austrian Grand Prix, but didn't actually see the chequered flag. It was a good weekend for both Alfa Romeo and McLaren. Lando Norris became the first McLaren driver to reach Q3 in Austria since Jenson Button in 2016, and both McLarens finished in the points in Austria for the first time since 2003. Meanwhile, at Alfa Romeo, the team scored the same result as they did last year, with Kimi Raikkonen 9th and Antonio Giovinazzi 10th. With his 10th place finish, Giovinazzi became the first Italian driver to score a point in Formula 1 since Vittorio Liuzzi finished 6th in the 2010 Korean Grand Prix. Raikkonen recorded the 241st classified finish of his career at the Austrian Grand Prix, equaling Michael Schumacher's tally. It puts him third in the all-time list, behind Fernando Alonso and Jenson Button. By finishing ninth, the Finn also equaled David Coulthard's record of 7 point scoring appearances at the Austrian Grand Prix. Finally, a fun fact about races held on the same day as this year's Austrian race, there have now been 4 Grand Prix held on the 30th of June. The 3 previous races held on that date were all won by drivers who had not yet won the title, but who would go on to be crowned world champion at some point in their careers. Perhaps that's a sign of things to come for Max Verstappen.
Leaving screeching skid marks all over the place. Two soft compounds.
Thank you to Nikki. That last fact was fascinating, by the way, so hopefully Max will prove that fact correct at some point in his career, and I can see it happening sooner rather than later. One thing I wanted to mention, when Verstappen was making his way through towards the front of the field, he had a difficult job overtaking Vettel, and then next on the list was Bottas. And I just thought Bottas put up absolutely no fight whatsoever. He didn't block, he didn't go across the track to try and limit the angle of the corner. He didn't do anything. He just sort of stayed well out of the way and let Verstappen pass. And I thought that was disappointing. Bottas doesn't often put up a fight when he's in that situation. And I think that could be the difference of him challenging Lewis further down the line in this season and not, because Lewis would have closed the door.
Yeah, he's very passive, isn't he? Even the facial hair on Bottas 2.0 doesn't help him in those situations.
Doesn't.
Driver of the week.
Oh, I think for me, driver of the week wise, it's just got to be Verstappen for me. I got a little bit concerned in the race when he came on the radio and said he's lost power, and I thought, oh, here we go again. It was the same as the start, wasn't it? Oh, here we go. But they did something with the steering wheel. They pressed a few buttons, and whatever he pressed was amazing, because he just came alive, didn't he? After that pit stop, the second pit stop, or the pit stop he did, you know, it was incredible. He was driving like a, you know, madman, and it was brilliant to watch, but was just passing cars for fun. I thought, you know, that's what we need more of. I thought he was brilliant basically on Sunday. And I think what's fascinating now is that I think him and Leclerc are very much on the trajectory of winning a world title, but be interesting to see which one of them is first, how many they win, if any, and, you know, are they going to be the guys that go on and beat Hamilton's record if he beats Schumacher? But I thought Verstappen was tremendous.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Didn't put a foot wrong apart from the start, which wasn't necessarily his fault with the stall. You know, going from seventh to win the race eventually this season as well, absolutely unheard of. I think we've just witnessed one of the best displays of driving in a long, long time in Formula One, and a brilliant weekend overall.
Leaving screeching skid marks all over the place. Two soft compounds.
So off the back of an amazing Austrian Grand Prix, and a Grand Prix that Formula One and we as fans definitely needed, the next one up is the British Grand Prix. I've got high hopes now for the British Grand Prix after that one. And, well, let's hope for more of the same, because that was tremendous, wasn't it?
I can't see Red Bull doing as well, because British Grand Prix is very much dependent on straight line speed, which we know Ferrari have and the Mercs have. Having said that, though, the British Grand Prix for me was always the race of the season that I thought could produce something special. So that would be great. And it's a really good circuit. And of course, 400,000 mad British fans will be there. The atmosphere will be amazing. Can't wait for the British Grand Prix. And we're going to preview it in next week's podcast.
And it's live on Channel 4, this one. So I can't wait to finally watch something live.
There you go, you pauper.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a Talk About Media production. All opinions are our own.